Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Ireland Crimes and Mysteries. I want to thank you for joining me today, and if you're a returning listener, I want to say a big thank you for your continued support. If this is your first time listening to my podcast, welcome. It's great to have you on board. So without further ado, let's get started on today's story.
Ireland Crimes and Mysteries is presented by Go Loud, Ireland's leading audio publisher and the home of Irish podcasts. Find new episodes on the podcast first on the Go Loud app and on your favourite podcast platform.
In the spring of 1984, life in County Clare still moved at an easy rhythm. Six Mile Bridge, the village where Patrick Nugent lived with his wife and young daughter, was a kind of place where everyone knew everyone else. News travelled fast, and a chat in the local shop often ended with somebody asking about the baby. Patrick Nugent was 23. Colleagues described him as even-tempered, quick with a smile and calm under pressure. He had started in hospitality as a teenager and worked his way up through Shannon Heritage, the company behind the medieval banquets at Bunratty Castle and the adjoining folk park. It was demanding work with long hours, but he thrived on it and had built a reputation as someone dependable. Kind of person who kept things running when a room was busy and the guests were full of mead and conversation. By the early 1980s, Bunratty was one of Clare's busiest tourist sites. The castle banquets, complete with music, song and costume servers, drew crowds most nights, while the folk park hosted wedding receptions, anniversary parties and corporate events. The development had grown steadily since Dr. Brendan O'Regan first opened the banquets to the public in 1963. By 1984, the 26-acre folk park featured more than 30 restored buildings in a living village setting, drawing visitors from Ireland and abroad. Because Shannon Airport was only a short drive away, many of the people who worked at Bunratty also had ties to the airport. Chefs, waiters and hospitality staff often moved between both places, creating a tight-knit professional community where everyone knew each other's faces and stories. Within that circle, Patrick had earned respect as a capable young manager. Contemporary reports describe him as the banqueting or function manager at Bunratty, responsible for overseeing evening events in the folk park. His co-workers called him steady and organised, someone who brought calm to the busiest of nights. At home, he and his wife rented a small house near 6 Mile Bridge. With a toddler at home and regular income from Bunratty, they were settled and content. Patrick often spoke about wanting to give his daughter a good start in life and was proud of the job that made it possible. Friday, the 10th of February 1984, began like any other busy night at Bunratty. Folk Park was hosting a private function, a 40th wedding anniversary celebration for William and Chrissy Ryan, well known in the local hospitality circles. William was a senior chef at Shannon Airport and many of the guests were family, friends and several off-duty Gardaí. The dinner took place in the barn, one of the large function halls beside the park's main reception. Music, dancing and toasts filled the night, while staff worked steadily behind the scenes. As the banqueting manager, Patrick stayed on duty until closing, making sure the final drinks were poured, the cash was counted, and the venue was secure before dawn. Those who were there said he was in good form throughout the evening. The event had gone smoothly, with no problems amongst the guests or the staff. One co-worker later told reporters it was a normal Friday night in Bunratty. In those days, the hospitality world around Shannon and Bunratty was close. Many of the same faces appeared at different events week after week. Chefs from the airport, servers from the castle and sometimes off-duty Gardaí who were part of that social circle. It was long before CCTV or mobile phones when a busy night was recorded only in handwritten logs and in memory. Patrick Nugent was a part of that small world. He had been promoted young, which said a lot about his work ethic. Managers at Shannon Heritage later recalled that he wasn't loud or showy, just quietly capable. He was the kind of person who kept everyone else at ease, commanding a positive work environment. When his shift began that Friday afternoon, he could not have known it would be his last. He checked the banquet hall, made sure the lights and stock lists were in order, and oversaw preparations for the Rhine celebration. Throughout the night, he moved between the kitchen and the floor, keeping everything on track. He was just doing his job, the same as he did every other weekend. Outside, February winds rolled in from the Shannon estuary, cutting through the quiet village as the last of the guests drifted home later that evening. Somewhere between 3 and 4 in the morning, when the lights of the barn were dimmed and the music had faded, that ordinary Friday night changed forever. Patrick was still on duty. Those who worked with him said later that he seemed relaxed. He was winding down after a long shift. By the time the music faded, only a few people were still around the barn. Most of the guests had gone home, but a small number remained. Members of the family and 2 off-duty Gardaí who were among the guests, a couple of Bunrashi staff finishing their clean-up. Patrick being one of them. He helped the Rhines carry their anniversary gifts out to a car parked in the courtyard. Outside, as I said, the air was icy. Frost had begun to settle on the gravel. Inside, staff were stacking glasses and wiping down the bar after a long evening. Sometime between 3:15 and 3:40 a.m., several people inside heard a noise outside. Witnesses later told Gardaí they heard a short shout, followed by the rev of an engine and then suddenly silence. When they went to look, they found Patrick Nugent lying near a low wall by the main reception doorway. He was gravely injured. One colleague later told Gardaí that Patrick was lying on his back, clutching his stomach and repeating the words, "He clocked me." The meaning of that phrase was never established, but they were among the last words he spoke. Some witnesses said they had heard a car collide with another vehicle moments before Patrick was found. When detectives examined the courtyard later that morning, they recorded tire marks on the gravel and collected paint traces from Patrick's clothing. Forensic analysis later confirmed that the samples were consistent with contact from at least one of the cars parked outside. The post-mortem confirmed that Patrick had suffered crush injuries to the chest, the kind usually caused by compression or impact from a vehicle. The forensic findings also indicated that he had been crouching or lying down when the injuries occurred. Those who were there described a moment of panic and disbelief. The courtyard was dimly lit, the air bitterly cold, and the noise of the engine had given way to silence, basically. Some staff tried to comfort Patrick while others ran inside to find a landline to call for help. An ambulance from Limerick was called at 3:50 a.m. and arrived roughly 30 minutes later. Patrick was still breathing but unresponsive when he was taken to Barrington's hospital, where he was pronounced dead shortly after 5 a.m. By dawn, uniformed Gardaí from Shannon had sealed off the yard and called in detectives from Ennis. Every vehicle still parked outside was photographed and examined. Tire marks were photographed. Items of clothing for lab testing were collected and statements were taken from the remaining guests. What had begun as a routine Friday night celebration was now a Garda investigation, the beginning of a case that would haunt Bunrashi for decades. News spread quickly through Bunrashi and Six Mile Bridge that morning. In rural Ireland of the 1980s, such a scene was rare in a workplace incident. It signalled that investigators were already treating the circumstances as potentially suspicious. Under Irish law, any sudden or unexplained death must be reported to the local coroner and the state pathologist, automatically triggering both a post-mortem and, if required, a public inquest. These formal steps began almost immediately after Patrick was pronounced dead at Barrington's hospital. The start of a process that would occupy his family, as I said, for decades to come. A post-mortem confirmed that Patrick Nugent had died from crush injuries to the chest, the kind usually caused by impact or compression from a vehicle. There were no defensive wounds or signs of a fight inside the building, suggesting whatever happened had occurred suddenly and outside. News of his death reached Six Mile Bridge within hours. Patrick's wife was told he had been injured at work. By the time family members reached the hospital, it was too late. Local radio carried short reports of a tragedy at Bunratty Folk Park, and the story spread quickly through the parish. I mean, Patrick was only 23 years of age. By mid-morning, uniformed Gardaí guarded the car park while investigators from Ennis and Shannon gathered statements. The death of a young man on duty was shocking enough, but the presence of state employees among the guests added another layer of sensitivity. Over the following days, every vehicle was inspected, photographs taken and witness accounts compared. What had begun as a tragic workplace accident was already becoming something more complicated. A case that would continue to raise questions for decades. But in those early hours of the 11th of February 1984, before the rumours and the reports, the simple fact remained. Patrick Nugent went to work and he never came home. Initially, when the Gardaí opened the investigation, it was treated, as I said, as a workplace accident. The days that followed were tense and uncertain. Local Gardaí from Shannon arrived first, followed soon after by detectives from Ennis. Their immediate task was to secure the scene and record every vehicle that had been parked in the courtyard. In the dim winter light, investigators used flash cameras to document tyre impressions, footprints, and the position of car doors left ajar. Statements were taken from staff still on duty, along with the remaining guests who had yet to leave. Under Garda procedure at the time, any sudden death or unexplained workplace death was treated as a potential industrial accident unless evidence suggested otherwise. But from the onset, officers noted details that didn't fit that description. Patrick's injuries were highly localised to the chest, consistent, as I said, with compression or impact from a vehicle rather than a fall or a collapse. There were no signs of a struggle inside the building, and no trace of alcohol or disorderly behaviour linked to him personally. Then forensic specialists from Dublin were called to assist. They collected fragments of paint and fabric from Patrick's clothing, along with gravel and fibre samples from the car park surface. Those exhibits were sealed and later tested at the state laboratory. Early analysis indicated that some of the microscopic paint traces were consistent with more than one vehicle colour, but the technology of the 1980s could not determine an exact match. Within days, questions began to surface. The Garda file was sent to the state pathologist and then to the local coroner, but the early paperwork showed inconsistencies in timing and descriptions of the scene. Some statements were incomplete, others appeared to have been amended. For Patrick's family, the process felt slow and very uncertain. An inquest into Patrick Nugent's death opened in June 1985 at Ennis Courthouse. This was more than a year after the incident. Proceedings were formal but tense. The small courtroom filled each morning with members of the Nugent family, journalists and staff from Bunratty who had worked with Patrick. The presiding coroner outlined that the hearing's purpose was limited to determine the medical cause of death and the surrounding circumstances as far as evidence allowed. Over several days, the court heard from medical experts, Gardaí and civilian witnesses. The post-mortem report confirmed what the family already knew. Patrick had died from the severe compression injuries to the chest. A senior pathologist explained that the injuries suggested he had either fallen or was already on the ground when pressure was applied. Toxicology tests showed no alcohol in his system. There was no sign of a fight or confrontation inside the barn, and witnesses consistently described him as calm and professional throughout the evening. When the forensic reports on the vehicles were introduced, analysts testified that paint fragments recovered from Patrick's clothing matched the colour and composition of at least one of the cars examined. However, the expert stressed that the results were not conclusive and could not identify which vehicle or how contact had occurred. After hearing nearly 2 weeks of evidence, the coroner's jury turned an open verdict, meaning the exact circumstances of Patrick's death could not be established on the balance of evidence. The coroner expressed sympathy to the family and recorded that further Garda inquiries were ongoing. For the Nugent family, the outcome brought little comfort. They left Ennis Courthouse with more questions than answers, really. About the missing minutes between when Patrick was last seen and when he was found. About the delays in the initial investigation. about why, despite so many people being present that night, no one could yet say for certain what had happened outside the reception building. The case might have faded into local memory, another unexplained incident, but the doubts never went away. Over the years that followed, the Nugent family quietly pressed for clarity, writing letters, asking for reviews and seeking official acknowledgement that the investigation had left gaps that needed to be filled. Their persistence would later lead to a full Department of Justice review and the reopening of the case decades later. This was big news after lots of very courteous but vague replies from Garda headquarters, the Department of Justice and local TDs, basically saying all matters will be given full consideration, but getting nothing concrete following that up. The family, as I said, had been working in the background. The case may have stalled, the inquest may have not answered all their questions, but they were working away, keeping a careful record of every correspondence and press cutting. Public interest in the case revived in the early 1990s when journalists in Clare began revisiting unexplained deaths connected to workplaces and public sites. Coverage in local papers highlighted Patrick's case as one that never sat comfortably with those who knew him. That renewed attention eventually prompted the Department of Justice to commission an independent legal review. A senior barrister was appointed to examine how the 1984-85 investigation had been handled and whether proper procedure had been followed throughout. Completed in the mid-1990s, the review concluded that certain Garda practices at the time had been less than satisfactory. It acknowledged gaps in early evidence collection and recommended that the file remain open, allowing for future forensic testing if new methods became available. Although the report itself was not published, its findings were summarised in official correspondence to the family. The first written admission that the original inquiry had fallen short of best practice. Through the 2000s and into the following decade, the Nugents continued to seek answers. They met with representatives from the Department of Justice and with Garda liaison officers assigned to historic cases. Each meeting brought polite assurances, but few results. Yet their persistence mattered. Every letter kept the file active, preventing the case from slipping fully into the archives. Journalists occasionally revisited the story in anniversary pieces for the Clare Champion and other regional newspapers. Features described Patrick as a dedicated young man whose death still carried unanswered questions. Local radio stations in Clare and Limerick aired short retrospectives, reminding listeners that no one had ever been held accountable. By the early 2010s, the family's efforts had made Patrick's case one of quite significance within Garda historical files. Although it would take many years before technology and renewed public focus brought the opportunity to look again. Nearly four decades after Patrick Nugent's death, Garda confirmed that his case had been selected for a full forensic re-examination. Part of a national effort to revisit unsolved and unresolved deaths where preserved evidence still existed. The decision followed months of preparatory work between detectives in Clare and the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation. The review began in the summer of 2023. A specialised team was assembled from the Clare Divisional Protective Unit and, alongside the NCBI analysts, Forensic Science Ireland scientists and the digital case specialists based in Ireland. Their brief was to apply the most advanced laboratory methods now available to material collected in 1984. The first stage involved digitalising the entire original Garda file. Every witness statement, every photograph and lab report was scanned and indexed to create a searchable timeline of events. Investigators could, for the first time, cross-reference vehicle locations, staff rosters and witness timings minute by minute. This digital mapping revealed several discrepancies in the way statements had originally been recorded. Differences in minutes that might once have seemed trivial, which now could be plotted precisely. At the same time, evidence held under seal at the state laboratory was released for retesting. Among the items examined were Patrick's work uniform and shoes, sealed since the post-mortem. Microscopic paint flakes, fibres and gravel collected from the car park surface, and residual soil and biological material from the reception yard wall. Scientists compared the paint and fibre fragments with historical samples of the vehicle paint used in Ireland during the early 1980s. These techniques can detect pigment composition down to individual chemical layers. Sensitivity far beyond what was possible when the material was first tested. Parallel to the lab work, the investigative team reconstructed the Bunratty Folk Park layout in 3D, using period photographs, architectural plans and measurements taken from the original crime scene survey. This digital model allowed investigators to simulate sight lines, light levels and vehicle positions under February 1984 lighting conditions. It helped determine which area of the courtyard would have been visible to staff or guests at different times. In late 2023, Gardaí began contacting witnesses who had attended the event or worked at the site. Many were reached through retired staff networks or local community channels. Some provided new statements, aided by the digital timeline that helped them anchor memories more accurately. To broaden this outreach, RTE Crime Call broadcast a detailed reconstruction in January 2024. The segment combined computer graphics with real-world footage from Bunratty, showing Patrick's last known movements and the sequence of events leading to the discovery. Viewers were invited to contact the Garda Confidential Line or Crime Call itself. Several did. Gardaí later confirmed that multiple new pieces of information had been added to the case file, including recollections about vehicle departures and the timing of the ambulance call. In spring of 2024, attention turned to biological and trace evidence. Although DNA degradation was expected after four decades, FSI technicians conducted low copy number DNA testing and touch DNA screening on retained exhibits to determine whether any surviving profiles could be developed. Garda sources speaking publicly through verified media briefings described the testing as comprehensive and ongoing. That autumn, investigators sought and obtained a district court warrant authorising the exhumation of Patrick Nugent's remains. The process, overseen by the State Pathologist Office, took place in September 2024 under Garda supervision and in the presence of family representatives. Modern imaging tools, including full-body CT scanning and osteometric analysis, were used to compare skeletal trauma with the original post-mortem findings. These scans provide precise 3D models of bone deformation, allowing experts to confirm whether the injuries were caused by a single compression event or multiple impacts. Senior officers described the exhumation as a scientific step, not a symbolic one. It was, they said, about evidence, ensuring that every remaining opportunity to clarify the mechanics of Patrick's fatal injuries was taken before time erased the last traces. As recently as early 2025, the cold case investigation remains active. The reanalysis work at the Forensic Science Ireland is continuing, and Gardaí have confirmed that new witness material has been incorporated into the digital case map. No conclusions have yet been issued, but the tone from investigators has changed. This is now an evidence-led inquiry, guided by technology and transparency rather than constrained by the limits of 1980s procedure. For the Nugent family, the renewed attention represents the most serious attempt in 40 years to answer the questions that never went away. It is not about blame, they've said, but about truth, about understanding precisely how Patrick died and ensuring that, this time, nothing is left unexplored. Four decades on, the name Patrick Nugent still carries quite weight in County Clare. People who worked with him at Bunratty remember a steady presence who kept things moving on long shifts. In Six Mile Bridge, he's remembered as a young husband and father who went to work on a Friday night and never came home. What has kept this case alive is not noise, but persistence. Patrick's family chose the long road, letters, meetings, records, and an insistence that the facts be set out clearly. They didn't push for headlines, they asked for accuracy. They wanted a complete account of what happened outside the reception building in the early hours of the 11th of February 1984. That patience matters. It's the kind of persistence that can move a file from the back of a cabinet to the top of the desk. Within the Gardaí, this case has also come to mean something. It's a steadfast reminder that older investigations deserve a second look when science improves and when systems can do better. The tools available today, digital files, refined trace analysis, structured case mapping, simply did not exist back in the mid-80s. Re-examining a case is not an admission that people didn't care. It is an acknowledgement that we can sometimes see more now than we could then. In the wider community, the attention has been steady and compassionate. When formal steps were taken in recent years, people in Clare responded in a way that felt respectful rather than reactive. The tone was not outrage, but care. A recognition that clarity is owed and that the search for it should be thorough and calm. That is where Patrick's story stands today. The work still continues behind the scenes. And if there is anything new, if we find out about anything new, I will bring it to you here first. But in the meantime, if you knew Patrick, or if that night at Bunratty is part of your own memory, please contact the local Gardaí. You can contact the Gardaí in your own area. You can ring the Garda confidential line, or you can contact Shannon Garda Station on 061 365 900. We end this episode where we began, with a simple truth. Patrick Nugent was 23 years old. He did his job well. He was loved. And for 40 years, people have asked for the full account of how and why he died. That work continues. And as I said, when there is something verified to add, I will add it with the same respect I've tried to bring to every line you've heard today.